All right, how's everybody doing? Hotep, hey, this is Michael M. Hotep, founder of the African History Network, host of the African History Network show. I'm a talk show host, researcher, lecturer, and writer. It is Friday, April 12th, 2019, and we are live. So I hope everybody's doing well today. All right, so I wanted to do a follow-up story on this topic, and this deals with Georgetown University, and this deals with the vote amongst the student body to charge fees for all undergraduate students of $27.20 to go towards a fund to help benefit the descendants of 272 enslaved Africans that were sold in 1838 by the Jesuit priests to benefit Georgetown College at the time that was in severe financial trouble and to save the college, okay? So there was a vote taken on Thursday, April 11th, 2019. So I did a broadcast Wednesday night, April 10th, and it went into the following morning because I started about 11 p.m. Wednesday night, April 10th, and we went into Thursday morning. The vote was taken Thursday, April 11th. So I want to talk about the results of that vote and possibly what this means as well. So everybody, share this broadcast on your Facebook page. Invite your friends to tune in also, okay? And we'll post the title of the broadcast here as well. Hope everybody's doing all right. Okay. And I was on earlier, testing 1, 2, 3. Okay, I was on earlier testing out the technology, making sure everything works all right, okay? And I have a audio clip to share with you also, okay? How's everybody doing? I have an audio clip to share with you also. ABC News has an article, Georgetown students vote overwhelmingly in favor of $27 fee for slavery reparations, okay? And I'm going to share a interview that ABC News online did with one of the writers for the Georgetown University student newspaper called The Hoya, okay? But if we look at this article came out this morning, April 12th. Georgetown University could become the first college in the nation to mandate a fee to benefit descendants of slaves sold by the university nearly 200 years ago. It was in 1838 that 272 enslaved Africans were sold. Now, a debate that takes place against the backdrop of a broader political conversation unfolding on the 2020 presidential campaign trail about reparations. And be sure to go back and watch the video I did Wednesday, April 10th, because I went deep into this, okay? And I'll post the YouTube videos on our YouTube channel also, Michael M. Hotep, I-M-H-O-T-E-P. It's there as well. And on Facebook, our Facebook fan page, the African History Network, click on videos, okay? Because I went deep into this story. And New York Times had the original story probably back in April 16th, 2016, dealing with it. They had a 12-page story dealing with this history. It's called 272 Slaves Were Sold to Save Georgetown. What does it owe their descendants? 272 slaves were sold to save Georgetown. What does it owe their descendants? In 1838, the Jesuit priests who ran the country's top Catholic university needed money to keep that college alive. Now comes the task of making amends, okay? And in the broadcast I did April 10th, I went deeper into this history. Okay, so let's continue. African-American business owners, post name your business here in the thread of the broadcast. We'll let you know how you can advertise with the African History Network. All right, so abcnews.go.com had an article this morning about this, as well as New York Times had an article this morning as well. So by almost a 2-to-1 margin, students approved the measure, which still must be approved by the university to go into effect. Now, the student vote is not a binding vote. The university is not obligated to follow the outcome of the student vote, all right? So the school's undergraduates voted on Thursday, April 11th on the referendum, which would increase tuition by $27.20, okay, per semester to create a fund benefiting descendants of the 272 enslaved Africans that were sold to pay off the Georgetown Jesuits' debt, a move that saved the university financially. Now, $27.20 is symbolic. That's in reference to the 272 slaves, and there was an organization formed at Georgetown called GU-272, Georgetown University 272, okay? All right, so Todd Olson, by the way, okay, so the vote was 66% voted yes, 2,541 votes for yes. 33.9% voted no, 1,304 votes voted no. Now, Todd Olson is vice president for student affairs at Georgetown University. In a statement issued after the vote, he lauded the students' efforts, saying university values the engagement of our students and appreciates that 3,845 students made their voices heard in yesterday's election. Okay. Hold on just a second here. Let me pin this to the top. Okay. Our students are contributing to an important national conversation, and we share their commitment to addressing Georgetown's history with slavery, end quote. Now, the university has vowed to, quote, carefully review the results of the referendum, and regardless of the outcome, will remain committed to engaging the students, descendants, and the broader Georgetown community and addressing its historical relationship to slavery, said Matt Hill, the Georgetown University's media relations manager, in a statement that he gave to ABC News. Now, sophomore Melisande Short Column, a Georgetown student, said during a town hall meeting to discuss the issue last week, quote, "The Jesuits sold my family and 40 other families so you could be here." Okay. The Jesuits sold my family and 40 other families so you could be here. Now, she's one of four students currently attending Georgetown University under an admissions policy that considers the descendants of the 272 slaves as legacy students. Okay. So just as if you were the child of someone who graduated from Georgetown University, you would be considered a legacy. You would get preferential treatment. When the story came out back in 2016, they were talking about different ways to address this issue. And there are about 4,000 descendants of those original 272 enslaved Africans. Okay. And one of the ways to address this was to treat those descendants as legacies. Okay. Now, the group also includes Elizabeth Thomas, who will receive her master's degree from Georgetown University in May of 2019 and is a desk assistant at ABC News in Washington, D.C. She's a descendant of Sam and Betsy Harris, who were enslaved and sold by Georgetown University or the Jesuit priests at Georgetown University in 1838. If the current referendum passes, it's unclear whether Thomas would receive any reparations in the future. Okay. Now, and let's see, Melisande Short Column, even though she's a sophomore, she appears to be a more mature lady because she has gray hair. This appears to be her in the picture. Okay. All right. Now, I want to go to this interview. How's everybody doing? Okay. I want to go to this interview here. This is one that ABC News did. Let's turn the speakers up. This is one ABC News did with one of the writers of the Hoya newspaper. Let's try to get this going.
To a major development underway just a few miles from here at Georgetown University, the nation's largest and oldest Catholic university. Students there today are voting on a referendum to give reparations to descendants of slaves. It's an interesting concept. Georgetown would be the first university in the country to approve such a referendum. They want to impose a $27.20 surcharge to each student per semester in recognition of the 272 slaves that Georgetown sold off in the late 1800s to pay for a debt. Well, joining us now to talk a little bit more about this is Yasmeen Salaam. She's editor-in-chief of the Hoya newspaper, the student newspaper on campus. Yasmeen, great to see you. So help us understand what students are actually voting on today. What would this do?
Yes, so today students are voting, as you said, on whether to include a $27 fee in student bills every semester. And basically, this money would be allocated towards a charitable fund that would directly benefit the descendants of the GU 72, the 272 enslaved individuals that Georgetown sold by the Maryland province of the Society of Jesus, known as the Jesuits, in 1838 to financially sustain the university. Now, if you read the Hoya's coverage, the main newspaper on campus, we've intentionally not used this word reparations purely because the money raised would not go into someone's bank account, but rather is going to be managed by a board, and then this fund would divvy out kind of a charitable motive, so primary education, eye exams, medical assistance, and a lot of these descendants live in Louisiana, which is where probably this money is going to be going if it
passes. Yeah, I was over on campus a little bit earlier today, you guys, and talked to a bunch of students supporting the referendum. They did talk about how they want Georgetown to be something of an example for the country, that this fund that they're creating isn't just about getting students into Georgetown, helping them pay for Georgetown, but as you were saying, create a fund to help descendants of slaves everywhere. The university, though, not so hot on the idea. Let's put up a statement from them, Georgetown, saying that they support the students' ability to express themselves, to have a referendum, to share their perspectives, but they make a point of saying that this referendum is not creating university policy, it's not binding, although they remain committed to engaging with students, descendants, and the broader community. Yasmeen, I want to ask you about that community. It does seem, based on your reporting at the Hoya newspaper, that students are pretty divided on the question of whether this fund should be set up.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. So there's been a lot of debate on both sides. $0.20 is symbolic rather than calculated, which a lot of people have issue with because there's not been much math behind what fee exists. Also, a lot of people are saying that the university has a responsibility to atone for its past, but not its students.
Just a second here.
And some descendants actually in Louisiana, because almost 1,000.
Let me back it up some. I'm not sure why the audio stopped. Let's go back.
For the sale. However, via like town halls and discussions, there is also quite a prominent no campaign. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Firstly, the figure $27.20 is symbolic rather than calculated, which a lot of people have issue with because there's not been much math behind what fee exists. Also, a lot of people are saying that the university has a responsibility to atone for its past, but not its students. And some descendants actually in Louisiana, because almost 1,000 of the descendants from the 272 individuals sold live there, have expressed concern that they haven't been properly informed about this referendum, and they kind of feel like it's rushed and the details haven't been as hashed out as one would hope, like how this board is going to divvy up the money and things like that. So it's definitely...
Yeah, we'll see how that comes out. We understand the turnout was quite robust today. Yasmeen Salaam, editor-in-chief of the Hoya newspaper, have to let you go. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing the latest there.
Okay, so that was from ABC News. That was from ABC News.
okay? In the article, Georgetown students vote overwhelming in favor of $27 fee for slavery reparations. Okay, so you have about 4,000 descendants of those original 272 enslaved Africans. They live in Louisiana and Maryland, okay? All right, so if we go back to the article here from ABC News. Melisande Short Column, a Georgetown student who is a sophomore, said, "The Jesuits sold my family and 40 other families so you could be here." Okay, she said this at a town hall meeting last week to discuss this issue and discuss the vote. Now, she's one of four students currently attending Georgetown University under an admissions policy that considers the descendants of the 272 slaves as legacy students, okay? Now, the group also includes Elizabeth Thomas, who will receive her master's degree from Georgetown University in May of 2019 and is a desk assistant at ABC News in Washington. She's a descendant of Sam and Betsy Harris, who were enslaved and sold by Georgetown University in 1838. If the current referendum passes, it's unclear whether Elizabeth Thomas will receive any reparations in the future. Now, a week ahead of the vote, a week prior to the vote, Melisande Short Column, C-O-L-O-M-B, joined 100 other students packed into Georgetown's Levy Hall on campus as the gathering mulled the impact of the proposal. Okay, now Short Column said, "No one in this room was here in 1838 when this happened." Okay, but she went on to say, "But we have a chance today to make a difference. So I'm going to pay my $54," she said, referring to the two semesters before she would graduate. Okay, now if she's a descendant of the 272 enslaved Africans, I'm not sure why she would have to pay into this fund, okay? And quite honestly, I don't think African Americans should have to pay into the fund in the first place. Who are students at Georgetown, if they want to, all right, but hell, I don't think they should have to in the first place, okay? All right, so the conversation on the Washington campus reflects a larger discussion as reparations take the stage ahead of the 2020 election. A number of Democratic presidential candidates have weighed in on the issue of reparations for African-American descendants of slaves. Okay, I went into depth into this Wednesday, April 10th, in that broadcast, talking about this upcoming vote. So go watch that video, because then we'll post a link to the video that we have on YouTube also. All right, now the issue of reparations is not new. Now, you got a lot of people just jumping into the reparations fight thinking this is something new, thinking they invented something. No, duh. you need to study the history of the movement that you just jumped into, okay, a few months ago. Now, it's been contentiously refuted since the end of the Civil War. Civil War ended in 1865. And incidentally, if you saw the articles we posted on our Facebook fan page today, the African History Network, we know that April 12th is the anniversary of the Civil War starting April 12th, 1861 in Fort Sumter. Okay. History.com has a good article dealing with this. Civil War begins as Confederate forces fire on Fort Sumter. Okay. Civil War begins as Confederate forces fire on Fort Sumter. Okay, that's from history.com. Let's go into. I'll bring up that article also. We'll go into some of that history because a lot of people really don't understand the history of the Civil War. We know the video. We know the documentary from Dr. Henry Louis Gates Jr. Just aired dealing with Reconstruction, which is extremely important period of time. That's after the Civil War ends, 1865 to 1877. Okay, the Reconstruction era, and you're going to have some advancements that African Americans make, acquisition of land, even though most of the land from Special Field Order Number 15, better known as 40 Acres and the Mule, even though most of that land is going to be taken back, okay, by President Andrew Johnson. But you're still going to have a lot of advancements. There's some advancements that are made. You have African-American men that become members of Congress. You have two African-American senators. But then with the Compromise of 1877, we're going to see a lot of those gains reversed, slowly reversed, Union troops taken out of the South. And then we're going to see that you have the Jim Crow laws that are going to be implemented because of Plessy versus Ferguson, 1896. Okay, we're going to see an increase over time, an increase in violence against African Americans from the Ku Klux Klan and other groups. We're going to see this increasing in the late 1800s, going into the early 1900s. Lesser from the Ku Klux Klan, going into the early 1900s, more from other groups, because a lot of the early members of the Klan are going to die out. They're founded December 24th, 1865 in Pulaski, Tennessee. And then they're going to be rejuvenated in 1915 by the movie The Birth of a Nation, which comes out February 8th, 1915, which was the 50th year anniversary of the Civil War ending and chattel slavery ending with the 13th Amendment, passed December 6, 1865, and ratified December 18, 1865. But if we look quickly at this, we'll go to this article in just a minute here from history.com. Let's go back to the one from ABC News, okay? All right, we have Toya. Okay, hold on. You said no sound, Toya? You can't hear? Okay, you should be able to hear me, Toya. Can you hear me? I can hear myself. All right, let's continue here. Okay, we go to the article from ABC News. Okay, so the issue of reparations is not new. It's been contentiously refuted since the end of the Civil War. One of the earliest proposals came more than 150 years ago when a general suggested Confederate-owned land should be confiscated and divided up to provide the family of free slaves 40 acres and a mule. That was Special Field Order Number 15, okay? Introduced January 16th by General William T. Sherman, okay? January 16th, 1865. Now, NAACP President Derrick Johnson supports a reparations measure originally introduced by Representative John Conyers of the 13th Congressional District in Detroit and reintroduced in every Congress since 1989. So H.R. 40 is what it was called, and the 40 is in reference to 40 acres and a mule. That was introduced by Representative John Conyers going back to 1989. And this measure, this House resolution aimed at creating a commission to, quote, make recommendations concerning any form of apology and compensation to begin the long-delayed process of atonement for slavery, end quote. Now, the NAACP began collectively backing H.R. 40 in 2014. And it was also in 2014 that journalist Ta-Nehisi Coates wrote an essay for the Atlantic.com supporting reparations that garnered national attention, okay? And it was called The Case for Reparations, The Case for Reparations. And I have I actually bought the Atlantic magazine. Now, it's online at their website, The Atlantic, okay? So we'll post a link to the article here. It's a fantastic article. It's really an expose that he wrote. It was extensive, a lot of research that he put into it. Let's see. We'll post a link of it here. But it's called The Case for Reparations, okay? By Ta-Nehisi Coates. And I pulled it up here. It says 250 years of slavery. It's actually 246 if you go from 1619 to 1865. But 250 years of slavery, 90 years of Jim Crow, 60 years of separate but equal, 35 years of racist housing policy. Until we reckon with our compounding moral debts, America will never be whole. Okay. All right. So that's how the article from Ta-Nehisi Coates starts out. That's from the June 2014 issue of The Atlantic, The Case for Reparations. All right, now, Derrick Johnson, president of the national chapter of the NAACP, told ABC News, quote, here we are in 2019 talking about it again, reparations. Here we are in 2019 talking about it again. It is a sore spot for this nation. It is something that we must address so we can get past this moment in time in a way in which the legacy of slavery, the legacy of segregation, the legacy of institutional racism can once and for all be done away with, and we can all prosper as a nation, as one whole community, okay? We know at the National Action Network National Convention that took place this past week, the first major gathering of 2020 for those seeking the support of African-American voters, a number of presidential hopefuls, including former Texas Representative Beto O'Rourke and former San Antonio Texas Mayor Julian Castro, directly addressed the issue of reparations. Beto O'Rourke said that he supports H.R. 40, a measure that has been reintroduced January 3rd, 2019 by Democratic Representative Sheila Jackson Lee of Texas, and which could be a means to study the impact of slavery in a way that is, quote, realistically forceful and effective to help African Americans who never had the issue of wealth that was inherited, end quote. Okay, now, so check out this article here. You can read it in its entirety. Okay, and this is from abcnews.com. All right, let's continue. We'll post a link to the article again here from abcnews.com. Georgetown students vote overwhelmingly in favor of $27 fee for slavery reparations. New York Times is an article this morning also dealing with this topic as well. Students at Georgetown voted on Thursday to increase their tuition to benefit descendants of the 272 enslaved Africans that the Jesuits who ran the school sold nearly two centuries ago to secure financial future. Now, this is going towards a fund, okay? The fund they voted to create would represent the first instance of reparations for slavery by a prominent American organization. Now, according to Yassalem Salam, who's the editor of the Hoya newspaper, which is a student newspaper there at Georgetown University, she said they don't refer to it as reparations, okay? But outside of that, people are referring to this as reparations. Now, the proposal passed with two-thirds of the vote, but the student-led referendum is non-binding, as I already said. Now, the undergraduate student body voted to add a new $27.20 per student per semester, $27.20 fee per student per semester to their tuition bill, with the proceeds devoted to supporting education and healthcare programs in Louisiana and Maryland, where many of the 4,000 known living descendants of the 272 enslaved people now reside. Okay. A 2016 article in the New York Times described the 1838 sale by what was then Georgetown College, the premier Catholic institution of higher learning in America at that time. Okay. So They sold for $115,000 back then. That's $3.3 million in today's dollars. The college relied on Jesuit-owned plantations in Maryland that were no longer producing a reliable income to support it. So the Jesuit priests who founded and ran Georgetown, which is Georgetown College back then, decided to raise cash by selling virtually all of its enslaved Africans, receiving the equivalent of $3.3 million in today's dollars, okay? Now, Shepard Thomas, who's a junior at Georgetown from New Orleans, said the school wouldn't be here without them. The school would not be here without them. And he's part of the campus group students for the GU 272 that worked to hold the referendum. Okay, hold this vote. Now, Shepard Thomas, a psychology major, is descended from slaves who were part of that sale in 1838. He says students here always talk about changing the world after they graduate. Why not change the world when you're here? Okay. So Shepard Thomas said the amount of the fee, $27.20, was chosen to evoke the number of people sold, but not to be onerous for students. Tuition and fees for a full-time student per semester is $27,720. Okay, that's for one semester. Okay. So Georgetown University agreed in 2016 to give admissions preference to descendants of the 272 enslaved Africans. Shepard Thomas was one of the first to be admitted under the policy. The school also formally apologized for its role in slavery and has renamed two buildings on its campus to acknowledge the lives of slaves. One is now named for Isaac Hawkins, the first person listed in the 1838 sale. The university has about 7,000 undergraduate students, so the fee would raise about $380,000. Okay, the fee would raise about $380,000. Shepard Thomas said, "It makes me feel happy that we as students decided to set a precedent for the betterment of people's lives." Okay, so that's the article from April 12th, 2019 from New York Times. Georgetown students agree to create reparations fund. Okay. And that's a, that is about the actual vote that was taking place. All right. Now, quickly here, if we look at April 12th also is the beginning of the Civil War. So it's interesting that this, the vote was April 11th and we're talking about the results of a vote, okay, on April 12th, and April 12th is the anniversary of the start of the Civil War, which started in South Carolina, and South Carolina was the first state to secede from the Union December 20th, 1860, okay, about 6 weeks after Abraham Lincoln was became president-elect, okay, and he was president-elect of the Republican Party. And that was a party created by abolitionists in 1854. Okay, so if we look at the article from history.com, the official website of the History Channel, Civil War begins as Confederate forces fire on Fort Sumter, S-U-M-T-E-R. That was April 12, 1861. Okay, we'll come down in just a minute. African-American business owners, post the name of your business here on the thread of the broadcast and email us at customerservice@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. We'll let you know how you can advertise with the African History Network on the audio podcast of our shows. We're on 8 different podcast platforms. I've been doing the African History Network show for 9 years. Also, if you like this type of information, you could donate to the African History Network, paypal.me/theAHN show, paypal.me/theAHN show, or visit our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. Click on the yellow donate button right on the homepage. And also you can register for the our 10-course online bundle pack where I deal with all this history and a lot more. It's on sale $80 right now. It also includes a 6-DVD Black Panther bundle pack as well. And it includes my 14-hour, seven-session online course that I teach. All these online courses are all on demand. Watch at your own pace. It includes understanding the transatlantic slave trade, what they didn't teach you in school. Ancient Kemet, the Moors, and the Ma'afa. Understanding the transatlantic slave trade, what they didn't teach you in school. What I do with thousands of years of history and what leads up to the transatlantic slave trade taking place. Okay, so the bloodiest 4 years in American history began when Confederate shore batteries under General P.G.T. Beauregard, okay? And I'll tell you what his name actually stands for, because I had it pulled up here. Okay, we'll go to that. P.G.T. Beauregard in South Carolina's Charleston Bay. During the next 34 hours, 50 Confederate guns and mortars launched more than 4,000 rounds at the poorly supplied fort. On April 13th, U.S. Major Robert Anderson surrendered the fort. 2 days later, U.S. President Abraham Lincoln issued a proclamation calling for 75,000 volunteer soldiers to quell the Southern insurrection. As early as 1858, the ongoing conflict between North and South over the issue of slavery had led Southern leadership to discuss a unified separation from the United States. By 1860, the majority of the slaveholding states were publicly threatening secession if the Republicans, which was the anti-slavery party, won the presidency. Following Republican Abraham Lincoln's victory over the divided Democratic Party in November 6, 1860, he became president-elect. South Carolina immediately initiated secession proceedings. On December 20th, 1860, the South Carolina legislature passed the Ordinance of Secession, which declared that, quote, the Union now subsisting between South Carolina and other states under the name of the United States of America is hereby dissolved, end quote. Now, after this declaration, South Carolina set about seizing forts, arsenals, and other strategic locations within the state, okay? They began seizing forts, arsenals, and other strategic locations within the states. Within 6 weeks, five more southern states, Mississippi, Florida, Alabama, Georgia, and Louisiana, have followed South Carolina's lead. In February of 1861, delegates from those states convened to establish a unified government. Jefferson Davis of Mississippi, he was a U.S. Senator from Mississippi. Jefferson Davis was subsequently elected the first president of the CSA, Confederate States of America. Now, when Abraham Lincoln was inaugurated on March 4th, 1861, a total of seven states, Texas had joined as well, had seceded from the Union, and federal troops held only Fort Sumter in South Carolina, Fort Pickens off the Florida coast, and a handful of minor outposts in the South. 4 years after the Confederate attack on Fort Sumter, the Confederacy was defeated at the total cost of 620,000 Union and Confederate soldiers. We know you had close to 200,000 African Americans who served in the Civil War. Okay, almost all of them fought on behalf of the Union. Okay, the North. All right, so check this out. This is from history.com, the official website of the History Channel. 1861, Civil War begins as Confederate forces fire on Fort Sumter, and that was April 12, 1861. Now, Equal Justice Initiative also has an article dealing with this as well. Confederate forces attack Fort Sumter begin civil war to preserve slavery. And the South was seceding from the Union because they wanted to maintain slavery. They did not want to give up their enslaved Africans because they talked about how it was essential to their way of life and it was tied to their wealth, and they did not want to give it up. So P.G.T. Beauregard, his real name was Pierre Gustave Toutant Beauregard, okay? Pierre Gustave Toutant Beauregard. That's what the PGT stands for. Check out this article also from the Equal Justice Initiative as well, dealing with the Civil War, April 12th, 1861, okay? All right. Okay, how's everybody doing? Yeah, African-American business owners, you can post the name of your business here on the thread of the broadcast. Okay. All right, now, very quickly here, if we look at 40 Acres and a Mule, blackpast.org has an article dealing with this, because you have a lot of people talking about reparations, but they don't understand law and history. So be sure and go back and watch the video I did April 10th dealing with Georgetown University's vote, the upcoming vote to dealing with reparations for the 272 descendants of those enslaved Africans, because I talked about reparations there as well. And then also on the April 7th edition of the African History Network show on 9:10 a.m. the Superstation, I dealt with some of the history there as well, okay? So, and that's on our Facebook fan page, the African History Network, and our YouTube channel, Michael M. Hotep, okay? Just click on videos. So if we look at the article from blackpast.org, blackpast.org, dealing with 40 acres and a mule. They talk about how this phrase evokes the federal government's failure to redistribute land after the Civil War and the economic hardship that African Americans suffered as a result, okay? Now, as Northern armies moved through the South at the end of the Civil War, African Americans began cultivating land abandoned by whites. Rumors developed that land would be seized from Confederates and given or sold to the freedmen, the formerly enslaved Africans, the black freedmen. These rumors rested on solid foundations. Abolitionists had discussed land redistribution at the beginning of the Civil War, and in 1863, President Abraham Lincoln ordered 20,000 acres of land confiscated in South Carolina, sold to freedmen in 20-acre plots. So there was land confiscated in South Carolina, and he ordered that it be sold to black freedmen in 20-acre lots. 20-acre plots. Now, Secretary of the Treasury Salmon Chase expanded the offering to 40 acres per family, okay? Now, in January 1865, General William T. Sherman met with 20 African-American leaders who told him that land ownership was the best way for African-Americans to secure and enjoy their newfound freedom, because you're still dealing with an agricultural basis at this time. Even though the Industrial Revolution had already started, goes back to the late 1790s in England, but you're still, in this country, you're still dealing with a large agricultural basis, okay? So on January 16th, 1865, General William T. Sherman issued Special Field Order Number 15, better known as 40 Acres and a Mule. So the order reserved coastal land in Georgia and South Carolina for black settlement, okay? From my understanding, it also included coastal land in Florida as well. Coastal land in Georgia and South Carolina. Each family would receive 40 acres. Later, Sherman agreed to loan the settlers' army mules. 6 months after Sherman issued the order, 40,000 former slaves lived on 400,000 acres of this coastal land. Okay, now from my understanding, this did not apply to all formerly enslaved Africans, because there was 4 million that were freed because of the Civil War. So from my understanding, this did not apply to all 4 million. You're talking about 400,000 acres of land, okay? Now, in March of 1865, Congress, U.S. Congress seemed to indicate plans for widespread land reform when it authorized the Freedmen's Bureau to divide confiscated land into small plots for sale to African Americans and loyal Southern whites, Because the Freedmen's Bureau, the Bureau of Freedmen, Refugees, and Abandoned Lands, they also provided services for destitute white people, Southern whites as well. Okay, destitute Southern whites who didn't own slaves. They worked on white plantation owners' farms, what have you. You had a lot of destitute whites, white people in the South as well. Everybody wasn't a wealthy plantation owner. So less than a year after William T. Sherman's order, President Andrew Johnson, who was Lincoln's vice president, succeeded Lincoln, sympathetic to the white plantation owners in the South. President Andrew Johnson intervened and ordered that the vast majority of confiscated land be returned to its former owners. Okay. So this included most of the land that the freedmen had settled. The federal government dispossessed tens of thousands of black landholders. In Georgia and South Carolina, some African Americans fought back, driving away former owners with guns, because we own guns. And one of the good things about the Civil War, one of the good things about African Americans fighting in the Civil War, is that we learn military strategy, we learn how to use guns. So a lot of us, you know, we're coming back. A lot of us kept the guns that we used in the Civil War, and we come back to the former plantations. We come back to our families, right? We know how to fight and how to defend ourselves, defend our families, defend our newly formed communities. So federal troops sometimes evicted African Americans by force as well. In the end, only some 2,000 African Americans retained the land that they had won and worked for after the Civil War. Keep in mind, it was 40,000 former slaves that got land in the first place, got some of that 400,000 acres of land. Now, other provisions existed for African Americans to acquire land, but they were ineffective. Prices under the Southern Homestead Act were too high for former slaves with almost no capital. So it's only going to be about 1,000 African Americans who get land from the Southern Homestead Act of 1866, which redistributed 45 million acres of land in five Southern states. Okay. The book, How White Folks Got So Rich, The Untold Story of American White Supremacy, the third edition, talks about that. How White Folks Got So Rich, The Untold Story of American White Supremacy. This is the second edition. But they talk about it. They may talk about it here, but they also talk about it in the third edition. I have the third edition in my backpack. Now, and then we know that you have the Homestead Act of 1862, which redistributed about 250 million acres of land. And African Americans almost exclusively shut out of this, and that land was given away for 100 years. So the federal retreat from land redistribution was not only a disappointment that cultivated a sense of betrayal among African Americans, it was also a missed opportunity for economic reform that might have allowed Southern African Americans to consolidate and hold political gains made during the early Reconstruction years. Okay. All right. So check out this article from blackpast.org, 40 Acres in the Mule. This gives some background history and background information on that also. Okay. Let's go to some of your comments here. Okay. We have Keith. Okay, he said, I don't want an IOU, I want dead Benjamins. Okay, now if you go watch my broadcast from Wednesday and watch the Sunday night, April 7th installment of the African History Network show, I talk about how the majority of the compensation should not be in the form of money when it comes to reparations. That'd be a huge mistake. And a lot of other people who actually studied this have said this as well. The reason why is because if all African Americans got $1 million a day, white people would have it all back this time next week. And you would not have brought about the structural changes that are needed in our communities. It's not going to bring about wealth creation. If we, each year we talk about our gross domestic product and we talk about a $1.3 trillion economy, and we talk about how 97% of those dollars are spent with people that don't look like us. Well, if we all got $1 million, you think that there would be a drastic change in those spending patterns? Those spending patterns have existed for years. So if we all got $1 million a day, or $500,000, or $100,000, you think those spending patterns all of a sudden going to change overnight? No, it's going to get worse. Because just like 2 or 3 months ago, you had people talking about boycotting Gucci. You have people talking about boycotting Prada. It's easy to boycott Gucci and Prada when you don't have Gucci and Prada money. Let them get $1 million and see who's going to be protesting. You'll still have some like me. I don't even watch the NFL because Colin Kaepernick hasn't gotten a job yet. He hasn't been hired by a team yet. Even though he and Eric Reid got a settlement, he hasn't been hired by a team, so I ain't watching the NFL. I haven't watched the game in two years, including the Super Bowl, or what I call the Sucker Bowl. So it's easy to talk, it's easy to boycott Gucci and Prada when you don't have Gucci and Prada money, but let them get $1 million and see who's protesting. It's just like right now, everybody, we can all say we're going to protest Lamborghinis. We're not going to buy Lamborghinis. Well, it's easy to boycott Lamborghinis when you don't have Lamborghini money. Let them get $1 million and see who'll be boycotting Lamborghinis. So go watch the broadcast I did Wednesday, dealing with Georgetown University. That was April 10th. And the show from Sunday, April 7th, the African History Network show, because I go deep into this. We'll post the links to the YouTube videos also on those topics as well, because we have that on our YouTube channel also. Okay. Willie Daniel said, thank you, Mike. Thank you, bro. We have to be financially educated first. And you see, enforcing the Black Freeman Indian treaties, that's low-hanging fruit, man, because, see, those are treaties still on the books right now for the Choctaw, Chickasaw, Creek, Cherokee, and Seminole Indians. And that equates today into land that they get, but also free taxes, free college tuition. A lot of them get a monthly stipend from the government, things like this, free radio station licenses, free TV station licenses. All types of things like that, okay? So it's a combination of things. It should not, all the majority of it should not be in the form of money. That'd be a huge mistake. And the only thing we would have done is stimulated white people's economy. So the stock price in Apple will go through the roof because people will be buying the latest iPhones, buying iPads. The stock price in General Motors will reach an all-time high. Why? Because you wouldn't be able to find an Escalade in any dealership across the country, including Hawaii and Alaska. Okay, so I'm thinking this through 15 moves ahead, all the way to the end game, all the way to checkmate. And there are people been involved in this fight, you know, Dr. Ron Daniels, 50 years, Dr. Julia Malvo for years. You had people like Reparations Ray Jenkins from Detroit, who's an ancestor, Queen Mother Moore, who's an ancestor as well. So the reparations fight didn't start like last year. Now, you had some people just jumped into the movement last year. Welcome to the resistance. I'm glad you're here. But you need to understand the history, right, of the movement that you jumped into. All right. So we'll post a link to the YouTube videos also. Get deep into this. Now, also, speaking of reparations, in COBRA, which has been around for decades, is having their 30th annual National and COBRA Convention 2019 to deal with reparations. 400 years of terror, a debt still owed. This is taking place in Detroit at Timbuktu Academy of Science and Technology, located at 10800 East Canfield Street in Detroit, 10800 East Canfield Street in Detroit, Michigan. Zip code is 48214. It's taking place Thursday, June 20th through Sunday, June 23rd. 2019, save the date. More information, visit their website and cobraonline.org. For more information, national contact phone number is 202-643-1460, 202-643-1460. Local contact number, 313-399-8797, 313-399-8797. I will definitely be there as well, okay? So that's the place to be if you're serious about reparations. That's the place to be, okay? Okay, so let's see here. Okay, let me post these links here on the thread of the broadcast because I put them on the wrong thread. Put them on the thread of an article. Didn't realize that. Okay, let's go to some more of your comments here. Let's see. But no, okay, so Wydea said, but none of those efforts have worked. Which efforts are you referring to? You make progress. Things have been progressing over the years. And see, one of the biggest problems is a lot of people don't understand history and don't understand law. Okay, this is one of our biggest problems. A lot of our people don't understand history and don't understand law. Okay, and the first thing we have to do is read the U.S. Constitution. First thing we have to do is read the U.S. Constitution and understand legal arguments for reparations, because a lot of these arguments are not legal arguments. They are emotional arguments, okay, for reparations. A lot of them are not legal arguments for reparations, unfortunately. A lot of people mean well, but a lot of these are not legal arguments. Okay, so let's post the link. This is the one I did Wednesday dealing with Georgetown University. That was the first one. Okay. And see, a lot of people don't understand Article 1, Section 9 of the U.S. Constitution. We'll talk about the Monuments Clause, but the Article 1, Section 9 stipulated that it had to be that the law had to be passed as early as 1808 to ban the importation of Africans in the transatlantic slave trade. See, a lot of people don't know January 1st, 1808, the law went into effect that was passed by Congress March 2nd, 1807 to ban the international transatlantic slave trade, to ban Africans coming to this country as slaves. After January 1st, 1808, it became illegal. But people kept doing that, violating federal law, which now makes a legal argument for reparations because you were illegally trafficking African people. Before that, it was all legal. People don't understand the difference. There's a difference between debating about reparations in a YouTube video or Facebook Live video and actually crafting legislation to get something tangible. You're dealing with something on a whole nother level. And so you have to understand law. It has to be legally sound. Okay, Willie said, I'd love to be there June 20th at the reparations conference. All right. Okay, yeah, so come on to Detroit, and then let's post the link to the article. Let's post the link to the video from Sunday. Okay, yeah, because I dealt with Nipsey Hussle, was changed by his trip to Africa and reparations legal arguments. Okay, that was from Sunday, April 7th, 2019, the African History Network show. I was dealing with legal arguments for reparations and understanding the difference. Okay, that should be a national holiday. What should be a national holiday? Do I support H.R. 40? Yeah, I support H.R. 40 because it's a start, and because you need to do when you have bills that are written in Congress. And they pass, the House of Representatives pass the U.S. Senate and sign in the law. These are bills largely passed because you have congressional hearings, you have congressional studies that are done, you have congressional investigations that are done. And then bills are written, they gain support, they pass, they come out of the committee, pass the House, pass the Senate. But they do investigations. They don't just do bills because of a book that was written. So you have to understand this process. This is why I'm explaining to people. It is one thing to debate this in YouTube videos. is another thing to actually try to get a bill passed in Congress. That's a whole nother process. And you and the House of Representatives needs to conduct their study. The U.S. Senate needs to conduct their study. U.S. Senate is a separate branch, is separate branch of the legislative government. They both need to investigate them, just like you have a House Intelligence Committee and you have a Senate Intelligence Committee, and they conduct their own studies. They need to do the same thing with this. You know how many white people have to vote for reparations in the U.S. Senate for it to pass the Senate? You're going to need some Republican votes, because you only got 46 Democrats plus two independents in the U.S. Senate right now, unless a miracle happens. And I mean, you know, they may hold all those seats and gain 12 more, because you're going to need 60 votes in the Senate. And most of them, even then, hell, you only got three people of African descent in the Senate, and one is a Black Tea Party Republican, Tim Scott of South Carolina. There's no guarantee he's going to vote for this, because I haven't heard him say anything about reparations. Harvard's Institute has worked on this for you. Well, Dr. Claude Anderson is one of my teachers. You can go look at, we've talked about this on interviews I've done with them. His main fight was dealing with the Black Freedmen Indian Treaties of 1866, which does not apply to all of, does not apply to the majority of African Americans. Now, it's needed because it's low-hanging fruit. He said his group has identified like 200,000 Black people that this would apply to, okay? No, ADOS is not why H.R. 40 will likely pass. No, not. Sister Gill, you got to go somewhere else with that. No. First of all, the Congressional Black Caucus has more members than ever before, more power than ever before, 55. See, this is what happens when you jump in a movement and you don't understand what happened prior to that. No, that's not why. No. They add to it, but it ain't because of that. No, I'm sorry. Absolutely not. You have to go study H.R. 40. What transpired before and under see, nobody wants to say, well, wait a second, the Congressional Black Caucus has more power than ever before. Sheila Jackson Lee reintroduced H.R. 40, which is revived. She's heavily pushing this. Also, this year is the 400th year anniversary of August 2016, 19, when 20 some odd Africans came into Jamestown, Virginia on the White Lion ship, and they were traded for food and supplies, even though we had been in this land going back at least 51,700 years. If you actually read the book, The First Americans Were Africans, Documented Evidence by Dr. David M. Hotep, and actually study some history, because there's a lot of people pushing reparations don't understand history or law. And this is part of the problem, okay? Because this book deals with the African presence in this country going back tens of thousands of years, long before the transatlantic slave trade started. So we have to understand history. Okay, people should read Before the Mayflower by Lerone Bennett Jr. Okay, people should read Before the Mayflower by Lerone Bennett Jr., which deals with a 400 year history, well, a little less than 400 year history of African Americans in this country. Okay, so we have to see this. People don't even understand like the movement they're really getting involved in. All right. June in Detroit. It's at Timbuktu Academy of Science and Technology, 10800 East Canfield Street in Detroit, 10800 East Canfield Street in Detroit. Okay, Timbuktu Academy. And visit their website for Encobra, encobraonline.org. So people just act like Encobra don't exist, NARC don't exist. All the people that have been fighting for reparations all these years pushing this issue. Just like a lot of people now that just jumped on the reparations bandwagon don't know that reparations came up in the 2016 election. Hillary Clinton talked about it, Bernie Sanders talked about it, because they don't study politics. Because they don't study politics. I covered the story when it happened during the 2016 election. I was doing my nationally syndicated radio show at the time, the Michael Imhotep show. I covered it when it happened. So a lot of people that just jumped in don't understand this history. Reparations came up in 2008. President Obama, before the election, said he was against reparations. Okay? Part of it, if I remember correctly, part of it had to do with it being a divisive issue. It is a divisive issue. Why? Because Americans are woefully ignorant about history. America needs a massive history lesson. This is what I talked about Sunday night and in the Wednesday broadcast. America is woefully ignorant about history. Before we get reparations, America needs a massive history lesson, because the way slavery is taught in schools, the history of slavery is taught in schools. And this is why I tell people, you see, you got to do research. You got to study. This is why I tell people, you got to read this study from the Southern Poverty Law Center, Teaching Hard History of American Slavery. It's a 52-page study which documents how the history of slavery is being inaccurately, incorrectly taught in schools across the country, not just schools where African Americans go, but schools, period. And it gives sound recommendations on how to more correctly teach the history of slavery. One of the problems is that the white supremacy and racism are not intrinsically tied to the origins of slavery. And they're not tied to the legacy of slavery. Slavery is largely taught outside of the context. It's not showing the relationship. And also when the history of slavery is taught, it's not showing the lasting legacy of slavery as well. So, and one of the things this teaches you is don't do slave reenactments and slave auctions, mock slave auctions, things like this, because it talks about how it's psychologically traumatizing to the students, especially African-American students. But see, we don't do research. This is part of the problem. So America must have a massive history lesson, okay? Because you got a whole lot of white people, not all of them, you got a whole lot of white people saying, why should I have to pay for slavery? I mean, why should I have to pay for slavery? No people who were enslaved are alive today. Why should I have to pay for this? If black people just worked harder, they'd be more successful. This is what white people are saying, okay? You watch Fox News? You read articles about Fox News? So people don't really understand long-term planning strategy. They think this is going to be a short fight. I'm like, oh, hell no. No, that's probably what they thought when the Civil War started. Okay, Phaedra. All right, so I posted the link to both of those videos that I've done, okay, because I go deep into this history. Okay. All right, guys, and then also you can register for the online courses that I teach where I go deep into the history, the thousands of years of history as well. We have the 10-course online bundle pack is on sale by itself, $40, regularly $130, Ancient Kemet, the Moors, and the Ma'afa, Understanding the Transatlantic Slave Trade, what they didn't teach you in school, Ancient Kemet, the Moors, and the Ma'afa, Understanding the Transatlantic Slave Trade, what they didn't teach you in school, which is a 14-hour, 7-session online course. And it's all on demand, watch all around the world. We just post a link there as well. And all of it's available at our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, okay? Dr. Claude Anderson has been pushing this bill for us black. Yeah. Now, if you go listen to some of the interviews I've done with Dr. Claude Anderson, Willie posted this. Dr. Claude Anderson talks about the mistakes that he made also pushing black Freeman Indian treaties of 1866. One of the mistakes was there wasn't a mass movement to actually push it. Okay. Not an online movement, but a mass movement. Most people don't even understand it. Most people don't know about the history. So there wasn't a mass move to push it. But he talks about some other mistakes that he made in pushing the issue. I think it was trying to make it a legal issue as opposed to a political issue. But he talked about some of the mistakes that he made as well. Okay. But see, we have to study this. All right. Let's see here. All right. Then also read the article from Ta-Nehisi Coates dealing with the case for reparations. Then also research back in 2014, I think it was, 14 Caribbean nations sued Britain for reparations as well. Okay. And in June, and in 2015, when Prime Minister David Cameron, then Prime Minister of Britain, when he went to Jamaica, the Jamaicans wanted an official apology for slavery, and they wanted reparations. And he said that he said they should move on, and he wasn't going to give an apology for reparations, things like that. Okay. There have been things that have been progressing year after year after year. There have been things that have been happening dealing with reparations. This stuff didn't just pop off all of a sudden. That's not true. No. But once again, like I said, you got a lot of people who didn't know reparations came up in the 2016 election. Now, you would have heard more about it if there had been more Democratic candidates. There were only two main candidates, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, who wasn't even a Democrat. He had been in Congress for 25 years, and he joined the Democratic Party just so he could run for president because he said it was too hard to run as an independent for president. If it had been 17 candidates for the Democrats in in 2016 like it is now, you would have heard more about it. You only had two talking about it back then. Okay, Jamaica calls for Britain to pay billions of pounds in reparations for slavery. Okay, this is, what is this, from 2015, September 2015. Yeah, that was the CARICOM, the CARICOM commission. And CARICOM sued, is a group of at least 14 Caribbean nations, and they sued Britain for reparations back in 2014. I covered that story when it took place also. So I've been doing radio 9 years. Okay, so a lot of people who are just jumping into this don't know about what has transpired. I've watched almost every interview you've done with Dr. Anderson. I've never heard him before watching one of your interviews with him, so I'm grateful you're taking time to educate us. Okay, thanks, Willie. All right, so we posted that link to the article. This is one from theguardian.com. Jamaica calls for Britain to pay billions of pounds in reparations. Okay, that's back in 2015. Okay, so, all right. Okay, African-American business owners, hey, you can post the name of your business here on the thread of the broadcast. Email us at customerservice@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, customerservice@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. We'll let you know how you can advertise with the African History Network. Our podcast, our shows are on 8 different podcast platforms. We're on iTunes, CastBox, Acast, Stitcher, FM Player, TuneIn. We take your 30-second and 60-second commercial. We put into the audio podcast of our show. Each show reaches thousands of people across the country. I've been doing our shows for 9 years. And if you don't have a commercial, we can create one for you at no additional charge. Our current promotion, get 3 months for the price of one. Email us at customerservice@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, customerservice@AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. We can get you started today. So if you have an e-commerce store, you sell books online, you are a book author, you have an upcoming event that you want to promote, even if you have a brick and mortar store, definitely contact us. And if you like this type of information, you can support the African History Network. You can donate paypal.me/theAHN show, paypal.me/theAHN show, or you can send it through PayPal to our email address, theAHNshow@gmail.com, stands for African History Network, theAHNshow@gmail.com, or go to our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. And when you send it through PayPal, if you can send it using the friends and family option, that'd be great also. That's even better. Okay. All right. Let's see here. Okay. Albert, I ain't see your comment. What is your comment? This thing scrolls through. I only get like 4 comments. What was your comment, Albert? I'll try to answer it before I leave. I'll have to answer it offline. Okay, we have Lanice. How you doing, Lanice? All right. Let's see what else. Okay, so I'm going to try to do another broadcast, live broadcast today. We're going to rebroadcast. Let's see. We're going to, later today, we'll re-air the show I did Sunday night. And we'll re-air this broadcast this evening also. All right. So I'm about to get out of here. I'm waiting for Albert to post his comment. Because I don't know what he was asking me. So be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, Michael Imhotep, Imhotep. Subscribe there and also click on the bell, because the bell will notify you when we go live and post new videos. Also follow us here on our Facebook fan page, The African History Network, The African History Network, and turn the notifications on so you know when we go live. Also, Denise said, great info. Thank you. All right, guys, look, I have to get out of here. I got other things to do. Hey, remember, at the African History Network, we focus on educating, empowering, and inspiring people of African descent throughout the diaspora and around the world, because right now it's correct wrong behavior. What you do for yourself, what you do to yourself, and what you allow other people to do to you and get away with is based upon what you think about yourself. Right now it's correct wrong behavior. It's not over till we win. Wakanda forever. We'll talk to you next time. Peace.